Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Okay, bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It's Thursday, March 21st. I can't even talk. Thursday, March 21st, 2024. I already talked about that. I always like to read a little story from the newspaper before we begin my interview. I already talked about this one at length with Thursday's guest, Matt Ginsburg, but this is so perfect for the distinguished guest who's waiting to come on. So I am just reading the mainstream media's response to the Tuesday election with just this huge smile on my face. I just can't get over it. I'm a lefty. I don't hide it. I've always been a lefty. I'll probably always be a lefty. I'm half the time I'm madder at the left than I am at the right. No, that's never true. But a lot of times I'm mad at the left. But I remain a loyal lefty. I was born that way. I'm going to leave the earth that way. The bias that the mainstream media has to people like me is hilarious. You gotta laugh at. I don't even know if they know they're so biased. No, they gotta know. They can't be that dumb. They got to know how biased they are. So, I gotta set this up this way. I talked about this earlier, but so a state senatorial candidate named Graciela Guzman was victorious. On Tuesday, she defeated an incumbent, Natalie Toro, in an election. Now, before that election, the mainstream media didn't know who was going to win. Toro had way more money than Guzman, all right? And she was the incumbent. Donnie Harmon, the head of the president of the Senate, Oak Park, pride and joy of Oak Park, supported Toro. So nobody knew. And so when you read the mainstream coverage, it's like, nobody knows. This race is very much up for grabs. You know, Toro has way more money than Guzman. So, you know, they were thinking, well, Toro's got the money. Guzman wins, gets close to 50% of the vote. There were couple other candidates. I don't remember their names. Excuse me for not knowing your names. Doesn't matter for the point of this story. All of a sudden, now that Guzman wins. Oh, well, of course she won because she's the lefty. And it's a lefty district. I'm like, come on. You weren't saying that 2 days ago. The bias of the mainstream media is this, lefties. They always want to minimize your gains and maximize your losses. And you better realize that going into this thing, because it's always going to be that way. Whenever a lefty wins, they go, well, of course, the lefty won. I mean, it was a lefty district. But when a lefty lose, when Bring Home Chicago loses, it's like massive defeat for Brandon Johnson. What's next? Mainstream media, you are a trip. Be honest. I admit I'm a lefty and I have a bias. You should just go, we are biased against lefties, and then take it from there. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest who patiently sat through that rant to introduce herself. Go ahead, distinguished guest.
Hey, everyone. This is Graciela Guzman. My pronouns are she, hers, ella. And I'm now the Democratic nominee to be the next state senator of the 28th district.
Yes. So first of all, congratulations.
Ben, I don't know who slept less, you or I. You sound like me before I had my cup of coffee. So here we are.
Yes. Wait, who did what did you say?
Who slept less. Here we go.
I'm going to have a drink of water. There we go. That feels delicious. All right. So did you agree with my basic assessment that began the show, that there is a bias in the mainstream media against people like you? And if you disagree, feel free to say, Ben, no, you're absolutely wrong. Go ahead.
I was sitting on my couch this morning catching up on press and analysis and all kinds of things, right? And I think the efforts to really minimize the months and months of work that this campaign put in to connect with thousands of voters across this district, the discipline that we had at doors, at phones, at conversations, you know, to have that essentially minimized by the same folks that in a breath were like, no, why are you doing this? You're not going to win, you know, $2.4 million, you know, is wild. And so, you know, the whiplash literally isn't more real than this moment. But, you know, I think we're here because not only were we able to connect with folks on values and things that matter, we were able to offer hope in terms of what the policy stances can look like. We're real people that with authenticity, we're able to speak to our community. And so to your point, you know, I see it. It's fun. It's funny now to look at it. But those were a lot of the same folks that were detracting our run to begin with.
Yeah. I don't know. It is. I mean, I laugh through the pain. I laugh through the tears. Okay. Yeah. It's funny, but it's also, it just, I see it every day. Secrecy. I follow politics, Chicago politics on a daily basis. So I see it in every single article about Mayor Johnson's budget. And I really see it. This is going to be on your plate when you go to Springfield. I really see it with the coverage of the Bears and the White Sox. Because when they put out those, they take those press releases that the Bears and the White Sox feed the mainstream papers and they just run them. And they never say like, oh, this is coming from the centrist wing of the Democratic Party. They never say this is the old Rahm Emanuel coalition that's coming back to get more public financing for private enterprises. They act as though this is a great economic development boom for the entire city of Chicago. Let's consider this. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. And again, it goes back to, right, the tools and tactics that folks that really aren't really quite centered on an agenda for working class people will use to try to be able to lift up their game, right? So we count on folks like you to help lead the way in terms of poking holes on their tactics. And we just have to keep speaking truth to power.
Yeah, well, folks like me, guys, this is just one guy in an attic in this podcast. I'm doing the best I can. All right, so why don't you read? You came on the show last year to talk about your campaign. And let's just do a little history lesson to folks about how everything went down and what set up for this primary fight that just took place on Tuesday. So let's go back to the decision by the committee men. I think it was in July of 2023.
July 10th of 2023.
Man, time just flies. So there was a vacancy, and the committeemen convened. I'll give the history lesson, and then you give your take. The committeemen convened, so it was a vacancy, and Zayas, who was leaving, said she wanted Graciela Guzman to replace her. The committeemen, nonetheless, Scotty Wagensback of the 32nd Ward cut a deal with Iris Martinez of the 33rd Ward, and I believe Villegas was in on that deal as well. And it was a weighted vote, and they stunned. Well, I shouldn't be surprised, but I thought they would just go with what the incumbent wanted. Silly me. They gave it to Natalie Toro, and sort of like Don Harmon was right there. Like the guy was right there to shake her hand. Welcome to the club. The mainstream said, that's it. It's over. Guzman, go home. You didn't go home. Take it from there.
No, and I mean, I think, so, you know, to be more precise, right, Dr. Pasiones Zayas, when she was considering the move to the city, you know, came to me and asked if I would at all consider it. I had conversations with, you know, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez. I talk about the journey that I had over 2 months chatting with community members. And I think for me, that really made it clear that, you know, the appointment was in no way probably going to come my way, but that I still really needed to, one, set up like the best possible argument for community for why it should be me, and then just to be prepared to run like hell. And that's what we did. You know, the campaign pretty much like day after the appointment, you know, I think we made it really clear that I would be running, and I would be running really, really hard. And that's what we did. You know, we started knocking doors in September. We gathered well over the petition limit. We were knocking, you know, pretty much consistently since September. And I think at the end of the day, that's why we're here. We made it unequivocally clear that we took this seriously, that you can't buy, you know, the vote of a community, that you can't lean on backdoor processes to appoint someone that had no community connection. And ultimately, I'm looking forward, you know, to get to establish tone for this role and for what the community's piece will be kind of in the 20th district moving forward. We obviously have a general we have to get through, and a lot more along the way, but this is a really meaningful next step in what we've been building here in the Northwest over the last 10 years. And I think that's the other piece of the equation, right? Like, it wasn't just about my campaign and the candidacy. It was about, you know, the suite of progressive electeds that we have elected at every single level of government over the last 10 years, and acknowledging that this was very much an opportunity to continue to build on that legacy, understanding that I have a unique role to play as an advocate that, you know, lives in Chicago, whose district sits squarely in Chicago, to think about what role we have to play, but that also has like very real nuanced ideas, right, about what policy can do for us in Springfield. So that's my take.
All right. So when I look at who was on the other side, I just took the snapshot. Here we go. Supporting your opponent, the Illinois Senate Democratic Fund gave $708,000, according to the latest website account. And as I said, the aforementioned president of the Senate, Donald F. Harmon, sorry, Don, I forgot the Donald F., he gave $137,000. So that is over $800,000. And then various unions gave money. The Carpenters Union gave money. The Laborers District Union gave money. Associated Firefighters, they gave money to your opponent. On your side, you got money from the Teachers Union. And I want to hear you address this issue. I talk about this all the time, like the different attitudes toward unions. You know what I'm saying? There's like this real hostile, negative attitude toward the Teachers Union in many parts of mainstream Chicago. And then so it'd be like, Guzman funded by the Teachers Union, like something horrible. Meanwhile, what about the other union? Why are they good and the Teachers Union bad? You get what I'm saying? They all lined up to support your opponent. Nobody said she's controlled by the unions. You know what I mean? So help me understand this. Why is there a distinction, in your humble opinion, between the Teachers Union and the other unions? Go.
Well, I think it goes back actually to something that you said, right? Like the narrative drift that happens. And I think like the story with the Chicago Teachers Union is obviously much predates me even, right? From the Common Good agenda and the bargaining around the contract season, obviously to the election of Mayor Brandon Johnson, you know, the set of candidates that got elected this cycle, not just including me, but also Commissioner Tara Stamps and other folks, right? So, you know, I think winning and winning and winning again doesn't make you popular, especially when other unions have endorsed folks that obviously clearly haven't won. So I think that's a piece. But I think, you know, having the most progressive, strongest teachers union in the country back me also doesn't make it popular. So folks will weave with stories they need to make that okay, right? But I think at the end of the day, you know, I've unapologetically stood on behalf of labor and union. You know, we have a lot of fights that we have to fight together on behalf of working class people in the state. And so that's where we have to take things.
Now, you mentioned that just because you won the primary, it's not a foregone conclusion. Excuse my utter ignorance, and I apologize up front. Do you have a Republican opponent in this race?
I do. I have a Republican challenger. His name is Jason Proctor. I'm sorry. So I'll bump in the general as well.
Okay. So my question is this. Senate President Don Harmon did not support you and gave a lot of money to your opponent. He is the head of the Democrats in the Senate. So I have to assume that he's going to support you come November's election. Am I correct in that assumption?
We've had a very, very initial conversation, looking forward to working with the caucus and putting more teeth on like what this looks like. But, you know, they've reached out, they've made contact with the campaign. So I think we're in a good place to start figuring out what support looks like.
So did you actually have a conversation with Don Harmon?
super brief conversation, with the president on election night. And I think he made it really clear, right? Primaries are really, really tough. They're difficult. And so we're looking forward to getting to know each other better and to find a path forward.
So did they ever say, they say something like, this is how I would handle it. I would say, well, Graciela, you whoop my booty. You know, you clean my clock. What can I say? Congratulations. Welcome aboard. Did they acknowledge that you won is what I'm asking.
They acknowledge the bigness of this campaign, right? Yeah.
Come on, Harmon. You could do a little better than that.
But I'm going to give credit. You know, I had to really roll off stage to get to speech and remarks. You know, there's going to be a much more in-depth opportunity for the Senate president to speak about the campaign. So I also want to be fair to, you know, the 30 seconds that we had before I had to get on stage.
Fair enough. And of course, that was Tuesday. Here's Thursday. You could have called or send some flowers, at least something. I don't know. Come on. Admit you lost. All right. Let's talk about what you go a little more specific. What you did to win. So let's start by just telling folks where in general the district boundaries are, the wards that include, the neighborhoods that includes, and what it took to be victorious.
Yeah, so talking about, you know, the community areas and the wards that we had, you know, the majority of our field operation and field math was in the 33rd ward and the 35th ward, you know, where we have pre-existing independent political organizations that have elected, you know, Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez, not just to the aldermanic role, but now to the committee person role as well. Carlos Ramirez Rosa, obviously. We had the 1st ward, 32nd ward, parts of the 30th ward, the 31st ward, the tiniest sliver of the 39th ward, the tiniest sliver of the 47th ward, and like the one precinct in the 26th ward. And so thinking about the geography, that means we have Albany Park, Logan Square, Bucktown, a little bit of Irving Park, Humboldt Park, Belmont Cragen, you know, amongst other community areas.
And so when you went, when you started your campaign and started doing door to door, did you already have a very good idea like who your plus voters were, like who were the voters that you could count on, or was it outreach trying to recruit, bring in new voters?
I think this again speaks to the coalition that we have been building here in the Northwest over the last 10 years. We've gotten a chance to have conversations with voters and voters and voters like time and time again, right? So there was some pre-existing work that we had done with the general and the election of Congresswoman David Ramirez in June of 2022. That was like certainly like a good base. The mayoral helped factor into like our calculus is like one of the biggest swaths of conversations we'd had in the Northwest. But we really had to get to work really, really quickly and use the petition period as an opportunity to re-engage voters and figure out, you know, if what we had mapped out in terms of our universe of conversations was still apt and right. And so, you know, I really credit, you know, the investments that we made in the field specifically as why we were able to not just have such this momentum and the strength and the numbers that you're seeing. You know, we hired the field staff as early as September so that we could kick butt in petitions and keep that going. And so we were able to have pretty much from September onward, you know, we started with about 7 canvas events in a week. We crescendoed that, you know, by the end of the election period, we were having 17 to 21 events per week. And so those were volunteer-led events that helped make sure that we could really earn this victory on conversations with voters at doors.
And what were the issues that you discovered voters that most, to use a millennial word, triggered voters, the most activated voters when you went door-to-door and talked to people?
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on where you were in the 20th district, like the top one issue would shift a little bit. But I think there was a pretty strong chorus around the top 4 issues, you know, housing affordability, even absent of conversations around Bring Chicago Home. You know, I think last time you and I were together, we talked about the trending on property taxes across the Northwest area. Right. So that and the impact that it's having broadly in our community, what's going on with renters. You know, I think that those were very much like top of mind. And so I would very safely call that a 1 or 2, depending on where we were. Generally, public safety, like how we could augment violence prevention and continue to strengthen our violence prevention network and look at other community tools was very much at play. And I would say like the funding of our schools, right? There's a really big diversity of assets across the 20th district, you know, incredible selective enrollment institutions, magnet schools, but I think also recognition that a lot of our neighborhood schools are still missing some of the basics. They don't have a librarian, a social worker, a nurse, you know, a lot of those assets. And so I think for a lot of folks, they're very much versed in the language of what is missing and asking those questions around like, how do we get there? And so that was the top four, pretty much consistently, like across the district. You know, you might get some minutiae around what was people's individual top issue, but for the most part, like these were the conversations that were happening just about everywhere. And I would say like the last issue, you know, I think it's kind of laced with issues broadly around affordability, but the rising cost of healthcare. You know, this is a district that a lot of folks have been impacted post-pandemic. Their ways in which they've returned to work are different. The ways in which they are now uninsured or lack of significant coverage, you know, are very, very much like present for folks. And so given my bio and given the expertise of the policy work that I've engaged in the last 12 years, I think that really gave a lot of room for folks at Doors to also share what their experiences have been with coverage. And I think a hope and a vision that we can transform what coverage can look like in this state. And so that would be the last issue that I would mention.
Wow. Healthcare is no joke, and it really has been. It's kind of lost in the chorus of all the other issues facing the country right now as we head to the presidential. Bernie was so right about needing healthcare for all. It's if you've had any encounter and experience with an emergency room, trust me, I had one not too long ago. Trust me, boy, do we need healthcare. Now, many of these issues, Graciela, seem like so overwhelming and beyond the scope of one state senator. What could you say to voters when you went to the Doors that what you would do with your vote in Springfield to, you know, make good on what they were looking for?
Yeah, I'd speak to two pieces. I'd speak to the work that I've done over the last 12 years around healthcare and be able to say, look, like these are really specific pieces of legislation and investment where we can see literally what the community's receipt is. But if we walk it back, there were hours and hours, and in some cases, years of coalition building that happened with legislators, community organizations, nonprofits, all kinds of folks, right? And so being able to have conversations in some instances across the aisle, right, or, you know, with different ideologies, different tactics, to be able to land you know, a policy proposal, that was something that I deeply understand because I've done it. It's something that I've witnessed when done extremely well with the work that we did with Dr. Pasión Isaias around educational investments and so much more. And it's also something that, you know, I'd experienced doing at the neighborhood level. So I think the fact that I was able to completely, you know, bring that journey of what that work looks like and also make folks understand, right, there's a lot of concessions and negotiations that can happen in those processes. And if we're not on the same page, if we don't share a North Star, if we're not, you know, calibrated about, you know, what we're willing to chip away, that means we're, you know, ultimately those kinds of things can go awry, right? And so I think the importance of having really deliberate community conversations, how we build coalitions, ultimately those are the kinds of things that I got to make real at conversation at Doors, I'm sorry. And I think the other piece is like, what is our community's role in building a people's agenda? And I think that's the part that really, really excites me. You know, we had over 17 pieces of community-sponsored legislation under Dr. Pasión Isaias' administration. And those were pieces of legislation, right? Someone would come up and be like, I had this brilliant idea to solve for, you know, salary transparency in our state, for example, or to solve for a specific issue around housing. And we got to lift those up and really work really tightly with our community members, because the practice of the best solutions coming from folks most directly impacted was alive and well. So I think there's an opportunity to not only make sure that we can continue that tradition, but to bring back community roundtables that get to make sure that we breathe in lived experience into the policy work, but that they're also helping determine the pace, the tactics, you know, what happened. And so I think that's another piece, like making sure that we're incorporating and including people also made folks feel like, oh, we're not just electing someone who's ultimately going to rubber stamp and do stuff as they see fit, but that there's room for us to also coexist, you know, with an elected in the 20th district.
And the issue of public safety, did you encounter anybody that automatically was opposed to you because your progressive roots?
I think I encountered folks that thought they knew what they were going to hear from me, right? You know, all folks that automatically thought that I was here to do the opposite of what it might need to keep us safe. And so I think conversations really, I think what I've learned, you know, from almost a year at Doors was to lead with compassion. There's folks that have been in extremely difficult situations. You know, folks talked about really violent incidences that had happened to them directly or folks that they knew. And I think being able to listen and create space for that was really important to just be able to engage the issue. But I think once we got to emotionally unpack that, then we actually get to talk about, you know, where the majority of our public safety dollars are going, and that's ultimately not going towards violence prevention, right? And so when we really want to think about how we create a system of care that allows us to prevent crime, you know, what that looks like is different. And so I think leaving space for those conversations, these weren't like short 5 minutes, hey, you're wrong on this or I'm right on these. These were like 15, sometimes 30 minute conversations where I really, you know, took that emotional journey with that community member, wanted to make sure they were whole and well, and then got to redream what it could be like to make different sets of public safety investments. And I got to ask them, like, what do you think about that? Does that seem immediate enough? Does it not? And I think those are the kinds of conversations that I'm looking forward to continuing in the district.
So while you're going door to door and you're running again, one more time, you're state senator, so you're a state officer, and one of the big issues coming before the state house will be whether to fund the Bears or the White Sox, their new proposed stadiums. Did anybody say, you know, Graziella, I really want you to vote for money for the Bears new stadium and the White Sox new stadium? That's a commitment I want to hear from you. Did anybody say that to you?
Pretty candidly, no. You know, I think, again, my district was pretty firm about its top four. So obviously looking forward to hearing what broader conversations are on multiple issues. It's possible folks feel strongly about it. But again, I think we really stuck to the core issues that are impacting folks right now most immediately in the district.
Yeah, I think that's it probably could be your first really tough vote. Well, I don't know. It'll probably go down before you get sworn in. All right. The your election happened on the same day that Bring Home Chicago. I think it hasn't officially lost, but it looks pretty bleak for it. I haven't seen they're still counting the mail-in ballots. And I know you were a big supporter of Bring Chicago Home. So where do you think that went wrong and in retrospect?
You know, I think when we don't always get to win, it's pretty easy to start pointing fingers at like what went wrong. You know, I think for a second, I do want to pivot to what the conversation looked like and sounded like in the 20th district, which was just excitement. You know, for a lot of folks, we would have a conversation breaking down a complex item and folks would be like, this makes sense. Why isn't it happening already? It could help prevent the displacement of people that I know or people that need support. You know, so from a place of like, what could it do? That was very much understood. And, you know, an initial analysis, sorry, of like my district, you know, was widely popular just about everywhere. I think we won BCH in the 33rd ward, 35th ward. I don't have the full analysis, but most of my wards won, not all of them. And so I think also just knowing that, you know, we have a long ways to go in terms of education in our community. I think you and I talked about this last time, how difficult it can be to explain referendum items. You know, I think about my experiences on Vote Yes for Fair Tax, right? For example, you know, how we bridge the difference between understanding a referendum item, understanding or helping folks understand and their individual self-interest, and then getting that to translate at the ballot box is something that we have to continue honing on. But I think seeing what we were able to translate in the 20th district gives me hope that we can continue to spread those practices and learnings, you know, for other issues to come.
Yes, and I happen to have the results. I am such a nerd when it comes to political results, so I wrote down all. Okay, so this is not with all the finals, Graziella, because this is not with the mail-in. The two wards that you just mentioned, the 33rd and 35th, were respectively 5th and 4th highest totals for bringing Chicago home in the city. The 33rd brought in with 61% favorable vote. The 35th had 63%. Let's see how good your knowledge of Chicago political trivia are. What were the top three wards in your humble opinion?
Ooh, if I had to guess, maybe the first ward? No? Wow.
Nope. It's a tough one.
I know. About 40, let's go to 48.
Yes, ding, ding, ding. Very good. 48 is third.
Okay, so we've got 3, 4, 5, 1, and 2. Cool, cool, cool. Let's go to 40.
No, man. Andre may have taken all the good precincts out of 50, but he only got 60. Bro, I'm just teasing you, Andre. You know I love you. He got 60%.
Okay, how about 47?
No, Matt Martin. Nope. A lot of those. Listen, man, they're good people in the 47. They go, I'm worried about my $1.5 million home here. I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Had it.
Oh, 49.
Yeah. That's yeah. Number one, man. My lefties in Rogers Park. Number one was 70%. And here's a stunner. The fifth ward, High Park. Yeah, see, that's the other thing that the mainstream has tried to get to think. They like, oh, well, black voters were against it. That's they fed that line in today's. No, not true. The fifth ward, which is majority black, 65% yes. Wow. So, sorry, 33rd and 35th, but the fifth ward kind of beats you in this one. Just saying. Don't get all cocky. Yeah. Oh, trash talk in there. Okay. Yeah, it's easy to feel kind of gloomy and doomy in the aftermath of that. What kind of encouraging words would you give to folks who are a little down by bringing Chicago homes, the lack of support? Let's put it that way. What kind of words of encouragement? Go ahead.
You know, I think a lot about what the coalition has been building there for many, many years, right? And so I think the promise of what it's going to do for community members is there. The good thing is, like, you know, I think those tenants have been things that we've been able to widely have conversations around with our community members. And so from a place of trust building, it actually makes it easier for the next go to be able to really learn on where we got stuck and give authenticity to those points. So I'm looking forward to like intentional debriefing and building from that. Now, the cool part is we have a whole election's worth of data on where we need to go back and give, you know, the next pass of data. Where are we going to concertedly focus, you know, a really strong field operation? Where can we focus better communications? Where do we build with Latine and other non-English speaking populations, right? So I think the roadmap is actually there if we take the diligence to look at the data.
We'll close with a little political talk. So how do I phrase this? Okay, let me phrase this. So it was about, when did Rosanna first win? I'm losing track of time. Her first election was 2019. Yeah, so she barely won. She beat the remnants of Richard Mel's organization. She beat Deb Mel, Richard Mel's daughter. Richard Mel was for years the committeeman and alderman of the 33rd Ward. Then he handed things over to his daughter. And Rosanna Rodriguez beat her in 2019. Very close. Iris Martinez, who was a Mel ally, and the committeeman, or committeewoman of the 33rd Ward, had a choice. Graciela, she could have said, you know what, Rosanna, you beat us fair and square. Let's be allies. God, just saying this, I'm just sick in my head and disbelief. I sound so naive. Let's be allies. Let's work together. I may not be as left in you in all the issues, but, you know, fair is fair. You beat me. Didn't go that way. Fought her every step of the way. All right. Try to beat her in 2023. Lost there. Try to beat her, try to beat you in this primary, lost. And now Rosanna Rodriguez defeated Iris Martinez in the committeeman's race. So she lost it all. And she lost her city clerk's position. Just think about that. You know, 4 years ago she won and now she's gone. So your thoughts on the transformation of power in the 33rd Ward, which is a significant chunk of your district. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think one, I go back to give credit where credit is due, you know, 33rd Ward working families that I feel that's been here in the 33rd Ward that helped elect Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez to the aldermanic role into the committee person role. They've been building, you know, since 2019 and before that. Right. And so I think we're really seeing what diligence in our community looks like in terms of trust building, the door building operation, what it takes to ultimately win strong progressive wins, right? You got to put in the work, and they've been putting in the work. So I think that's one piece. But I think the other piece too, you know, I think what this run taught me from the conversations at Doors and with our progressive movement is when you have a candidate that is in touch with community, that brings excitement, that gives people something optimistically to look forward to. There's so much energy that comes from all kinds of places to actually help make that happen. And I think, you know, not to speak ill of Clerk Martin or of Iris Martinez, but I think ultimately she had alienated a fair amount of folks already in 2022. You know, she made choices that very much came from a place of trying to hold on to power as opposed to how to reconnect with her community. And that's why we're here.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Although, you know, you can hold on to power if you just reach out every now and then. I don't think, you know, those old, you know, it's so funny. The word machine gets kicked around a lot. So my friends in the mainstream media, they always call it, like, every time a lefty wins, it's the CTU machine, the all-powerful CTU. And I always laugh because it's not a machine in the classic sense of the word. There is no machine anymore, actually. But there's a machine mentality. And part of the machine mentality is you never acknowledge, like, just the basic humanity of your opposition. They're always your enemy. You're always against them. And so instead of, like I said, making a coalition, thinking long term, you get what I'm saying? No, we're going to keep fighting you. We're just going to keep battling you to the end. I think that mentality really is so outdated here in the city of Chicago. Your thoughts?
No, it is outdated. And I think ultimately, like, this is for us, this was about community, literally for community by community. Right. And so I think to think about it in any other way is really, really difficult for me. You know, but that being said, you know, I do take point, right, with folks that say, well, you're lefty machine, you're CTU machine. No, we are for community by community. Community asked us to do this. And that's why we're here. Right. The same community that helped me rethink the nomination process and go through the candidacy, for example, if those folks didn't share values, if they didn't want to throw down on the field, we wouldn't be here, right? And so ultimately, community will go wherever they feel like is the best path for someone that can not only lift up a people's agenda, but that's also going to do it in a shared mind way, right? And so we call that actually collective power. We call that transforming power in places that don't receive us, that don't want to receive us, but have to receive us anyway. And so that's always not always going to be nice and pretty or popular, but we're going to do it anyway.
All right, very good. I'm going to allow you to close with any shout outs you want to give, any final thoughts you want to give in the immediate aftermath of your victory. So go ahead.
Oh, man, I'll be brief, but just to say thank you to, like, the broader progressive community across Chicago that really put its arms around this campaign and saw us for what we were back post-appointment. You know, thanks, Ben, for having me on the show and giving me platform for, my stubbornness, right, that I had a vision for this district and that we were going to run. I'm thankful for a team that came deeply from community members that understood the tradition because they had led in independent political organizations. I'm thankful for our canvassers, for our phone bankers, for the folks that donated from a dollar and beyond. You know, we're really here because we had collective gifts and skills that got to elevate me in this campaign. So I'm excited to continue throwing down with you all, and let's go.
All right, very good. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you real soon. All right.
Thanks, y'all.
All right, that's Graciela Guzman. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.